1958 was the year Derry had won their first ever Ulster title, and in that semi-final, played in a continuous torrential downpour, they stunned the sporting world when they beat raging hot favourites Kerry by 1 point. To relive this and discuss his sporting life and times, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by a man who many people have rated as one of Kerry's greatest ever footballers, and I, for one, certainly agree with this rating. Tom Long, you're very welcome to the programme, and today's semi-final will, I have no doubt, bring back many memories for you, Tom.
It does indeed. It's a good many moons ago, but yet there are some similarities between it and the present occasion. Then, as now, we didn't know that much about Derry, but we had got ample warnings, but obviously they went unheeded. It was the end of Cavan's dominance in Ulster, really. New teams had come to the fore. You had Tyrone had come and Derry had come. And this year, another new team had come. Derry and Down contested the Ulster final, neither of whom had yet won an Ulster championship. And as you know, Derry succeeded. But there were names as well that we should have heeded. McKeever had been, and the Gribbon brothers, Sean O'Connell, those names that had been involved in interprovincial football, and somehow they passed us by. The county board, in order to get some information, they commissioned Frank Sheehy and a few others to go up and watch the Ulster Championship. But unfortunately, we are told their car broke down and the game was over when they arrived there. So we didn't get anything from that. But Paul Russell, who was writing for a paper at the time, had warned us well. He had attended one of their training sessions.
He's a legendary Kerry footballer.
Our own Paul from Sunny Hill here. Yeah. He had attended a training session. And for the first time ever, he saw a PE instructor in the person of Jim McKeever putting the team through their paces. And he felt this was an advantage that Kerry didn't hear of. And he warned us in the paper.
So there was an evolution starting, really, at that time.
As far as GA were concerned, as far as Paul was concerned, that's the first time he saw this type of training going on. And he felt that Kerry would be at an awful disadvantage. So it was in that light that we went out and played the game. It was an awful day, as you said there a while ago, terrible. I hadn't played. It was my first game back after a 10-month layoff. And we got on fine. We even got a soft goal that we shouldn't have got. Tiggy Lang got a close in free and it went untouched to the net earlier on. But even that didn't help us. We kept slogging away. I'd say the second half is the most memorable part of it. It was the first time that two of the greatest exponents of pure football came head to head, namely Mick O'Connell and Jim McKeever. Mick was moved out to midfield. He had been in the wing. And it was the first of many exhibitions that those two players gave of pure football.
Well, Tom,
it was a joy to watch.
I was standing under the Cusick stand under the old Cusick stand, and as you say, it was a torrential downpour, and Mick O'Connell came out, and I'll never, ever forget the display he gave. Talk away.
Yeah, it was the first of many. As the game went on, and I think they pipped us by a point, what I remember mostly about it was the scathing criticism in the Kerryman by PF on the following Saturday. Oh, he berated the forwards, especially. I took that being one of them. He berated the forwards for squandering golden opportunities.
And he berated you, Tom, for passing the ball too much.
I don't remember that part of it, yeah. But 17 wides, I think, in all.
As a matter of fact, Tom, he said, during the past half century, Kerry football teams have caused sensations. They lived through to that tradition last Sunday, even if they did not live up to others. Yeah. They lost a game which they dominated for most of the hour. They lost enough scoring chances to have won twice over. It was not so much that Derry were victorious, but that the Kerrymen threw away the match. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
That is what I think I remember all right. He even suggested that was just as well that Derry beat us, because that Kerry, that Dublin would have annihilated us in the final. And in a subsequent issue, he claimed that the semi-final defeat was fortunate, because it would cost about £1,000 to prepare the team for a final in which they would be defeated.
Big change in times, Tom.
Yeah, couldn't go very far now.
Come here, Tom. The team that day that were beaten by Kerry, rattle off some of the Kerry names for us.
Tom Moriarty, it was his last game, unfortunately. He broke a leg. I remember he came off. Oh, you had John Dowling and the whole lot. Niall Sheehy, Jerome O'Shea.
John Dowling, Paddy Sheehy, Tiggy Lyon, and so on. But you know, Tom, we were discussing it there before we started off. One of the most remarkable things about it was that the selectors, the Kerry selectors, had more All-Ireland medals between them than all the players in the field. And they lost the game with John Joshi with four All-Irelands, Johnny Welch with five All-Irelands, Con Ganey with one, Jackie Lyon with two, and Gerald O'Sullivan had one. Yeah. And still in all, they couldn't make the right moves.
Well, you certainly wouldn't take them on in an argument anyhow. They knew every twist and turn.
You would not. Your final memories of the day, Tom, as you say, it caused a sensation, didn't it?
It did, I suppose, but it was nice to see a new team emerge, you know.
And Derry were beaten in the final.
They were beaten by Dublin in the final, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom, even though you're living in Killarney all your life and living in Fossa, where Paul Griffin, the Olympian, comes from, you weren't born in Kerry. Tell us where you were born.
I was born in Kerry, all right, Lee, was she? I was born in Ventry.
Yeah.
A little parish back there in the West Kerry Gaeltacht. I suppose I was born at a time when football fever was prevalent in the peninsula. The peninsula had big number of stars on the Kerry team at that time. Just back the road from me, a mile back the road, you had Bat Garvey. And a little bit further on, you had Dan Kavanagh. Dan, you know, and his wife Nellie, hale and hearty down there on Muckross Road. And then a little bit later, Mick Murphy in my own time. And just a few miles over the road in Dingle, then you had Paddy Bourne, Giga O'Connor, Bill Dillon, Bill Casey, and others on the Kerry. There was another Tom Long, by the same token, who was a sub around that time.
Who was the other Tom Long?
He was a publican in Dingle there, in Holy Ground. His name is still over the door. As a matter of fact, he had a few callers thinking it was me. I lost a few bob there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're related to Paddy Shea?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your relationship, Tom?
We were first cousins. My mother was an O'Shea, so that's how.
Young days, can you remember Stacht? I suppose it was all, like all young fellas back in your time, just kicking football. What are your memories of Stachting?
I think there was, just because of those stars around, there was football fever, like, and we were immigration now was rife at the time. It was the days of John B. Keynes, he recalled it, many young men of 20 said goodbye. You'd have a team one day, I remember, in the seniors now I'm talking about, I was still in primary school at this time, but you'd have a team one day, two Sundays after, two midfielders gone. And so on. As a matter of fact, that was strikingly brought home to me when I visited the United States in our first visit in 59. I met more of my former school comrades in different centres in the United States than I'd meet at any gathering at home.
Tom.
But anyhow, we that was the state. We were very fortunate in my primary days that Father Jackie McKenna came as curate to Ballyferriter. And he did some Trojan work. He organised school, inter-school competition. And this was a night that I'd like to say thank you to Jackie, to Father Jackie, now Canon Jackie, of course.
What was your club, Tom, when you started?
Ventry. Ventry, which was a part of the Gaeltacht. The Gaeltacht didn't have a county club at the time.
Yeah.
We were just part of West Kerry. So all my endeavours were with the West Kerry.
Tom, you were only 15 years of age when you played with the great, the one and only Paddy Von Brosnan.
Yes, that happened. But as we said a while ago, it was a time of emigration, you know. And it was played early in the year. It was against Stranraer, I remember. And every team would be short a few. Every team could get 12 or 13 together, but they'd be short a few. So I suppose it was in that context that I was called. And I was at home from college and I had my boots and my gear and ready to go. So I just fitted in. But above all places, I was placed at left full back, besides Paddy. I didn't know that till the team was announced. And we went on the field anyhow, and I was on this big, tall guy. Raymond was his name. He was 6'1", 2", I'd say, if not more. I remember the first high ball that came in anyhow, Paddy was shouting, keep him out, keep him out, keep him out. I should Raymond was, he brushed me aside with the greatest of ease, and Paddy had two to contend with, of course. But I must say now that Raymond was very fair. He did, he treated me with the, he was very gentle.
Describe Paddy Barn in your mind's eye to us, Tom. That game.
Well, it's, I was young, but I saw the muscles on his legs, like, you know. And he was, there wasn't an ounce of flesh on him. He was a hard, he was a fisherman, you know, and that was pulling in nets and that. But he was a powerful. The strange thing about it, I thought he was human. I found out that he was human and that he, I could nearly run as fast as him. I suppose it was that time of year. And yeah.
Were you in awe of him? Pardon? Were you in awe?
Well, naturally, before that, you know, but he put you at ease, like, and he'd tell you, Byne, you go there and just watch that fella and keep him out, you know. He was great.
Yeah. Lovely memory, Tom. Yeah. Of course, you played with the Kerry Miners then for 2 years, and you went to Clarashdy Sagan, and your young days playing football. You have great memories and bad memories of Kerry Miners.
I had my minor days were not the most fruitful at all as regards winning, but they were most enjoyable. I spent 4 seasons with Dingle Miners. We were improving each year, and we seemed to go a step further each year. And we always seemed to be knocked out by the eventual winners. And then we got to the quarter-final my second year, the third, we got to the semi-final, and my last year we got to the final. We were pipped by a point in the final by John Mitchell, who had a very crafty team at the time. You had Teddy Dowd and Lynch and Sheehy and Mangi Hoare and a number of the Kerry Miners that we played together, you know. But the strange thing about it, the following year, Dingle had 12 of that team, and of course they're Rom-Tuam winners. So I was left without it.
And you played 2 years in Kerry Minor?
I did, I suppose, 53 and 54. Again, two not... I remember them with great satisfaction, but who wants medals anyhow? But that's 53. We played Cork in the Munster final, and it was played on a Sunday evening, I remember. And, you know, they weren't as particular about refs that time, and they got this ideal, what they considered an ideal man, a Kerry man, a Kerry native, living in Cork, and who had played football with Cork. Yeah, I'm sure you know him, Father Jimmy White, from Knockendove. I think he played under the name of Jim O'Brien. The clerics were not allowed to play at that time. He played under the name of Jim O'Brien, cornerback with Cork. But he was the ref anyhow. But he showed his colours before the end of the game. All right. The second half was before official extra time came in. There was a lot of extra time, and Cork went a point up, and the whistle was blown.
Yes. So Tom, some things never change in relation to referees, do they?
I have a memory that I can say it. Yeah. At the end of that, after the game, Brendan Kennelly was playing with us, and I remember his father, Hugh, a big, strong man. And he was just anxious to have a word with the ref, we'll put it like that. And he was walking across the field, and he had a big trench coat on him. And Gaffney Duggan, you remember Gaffney?
The bag man.
He had hold of the tail of
Brendan's father's
coat. And he was, and your man didn't even feel that he was at the end of the court. Yeah, but nothing happened, actually. He was just walking now, I want to say.
Talking about Brendan Kennelly, of course, the following year then, Brendan was one of your teammates when you went to the All-Ireland Minor semi-final against Dublin. And that was a sensational end, because you were actually robbed of the All-Ireland title. Time up, and Dublin were practically 5 points down.
That's right. We were coasting, actually. I'd said a couple of minutes ago we were two goals up, and I think the ref was blamed by some Kerry people for that too. They were too harsh freeze given against us, and they ended in two goals, so we were hit by a point again.
Was that a big disappointment, Tom?
It was, of course. I suppose after all the other disappointments I had in minor with West Kerry and with Kerry, I suppose it was, but still, afterwards it means nothing, you know.
You're
but
strong.
The same, Brendan. I remember we went to Dublin for the semi final, and it was my first time going to Dublin. And I, with a lot of the team, I'd say it would be the same. And we went to a film the night before. I think it was Samson and Delilah, and you had this this girl was lying out in the sun in the jungle somewhere. I forget now, and this snake was making its way towards her. And you know, the whole cinema, you know, it was you'd hear a pin drop, And we were all in a bunch. And next thing, Brendan jumped up and threw the coat up in the air, letting an almighty shriek out of him. Well, everybody jumped a foot off their seats. The place went up, attendance lights flashing, lamps flashing. He was a great guest, man. And full of humour.
Your Frank O'Leary was one of your teammates in that, and Johnny Colletti, of course, and Teddy Dowd, and Freddie Lynch and Brian Sheehy. And there was a G. White playing that there.
George White,
We will come to at a later date, because he was to have a big bearing on the history of Kerry football, wasn't
that's
he,
correct,
Dan? But we'll come to him later. Yeah. But you were beaten in 54. You went to school then. Where did you...
I went to, it made up a lot, but I went to Clash Tisagon down in Ballyvourna, you know, there. And I did a very happy 4 years there. I was happy because we had plenty of football. You played football every day. We played it in the snow. There was nothing else to do, but never secluded in all as there was. I never heard the word boredom, you know, we just made our own fun. But we had a great run there. In the 4 years I was there, we won Corran na Mon, that's the Munster Senior Colleges. They won a treat of the 4 years.
Who were your teammates?
No, I didn't make it the first year. Fortunately, I got on the second year and we won. We had a Killarney man here, Mihal O'Connor, of the stadium.
Yeah,
a great colleges player, wonderful. And another Killarney man, Con O'Brien. Yeah. And you had Tim Bailey, of course, from Farran Four, and... quite a few other, and Horton from Tralee, a few more like that.
Having watched you playing and having played with you, you were equally good with your right and your left. Did you practice your right and your left kicking in those days?
Well, I'd say I didn't have a left when I went to Ballyvourna first, but we did concentrate on it there. We were very fortunate there. We had a gifted trainer. We did PE now before it was known and before it was done elsewhere. And he made the sessions very interesting. Yeah. Brother Bernardine,
is that right?
Gone.
Yeah. And you went to Dublin, of course, to continue your studies?
Yes, we went to Dublin in 54, 56, and I had a bit of a rest in it after that, I suppose, after the final in the Kerry Minor final in 54. The following Sunday, our own team, Geraldines, were playing the Dublin Championship, and a few of them called in during the week and they asked if I'd consider playing under an assumed name. So we would a duck swim. I was in there, but I just asked them, and I did. We talked about it, and they said, no problem at all. It was very widespread at the time, seemingly. Under an assumed name.
What was the name?
It was a brother of mine. I'd actually played a few games with him, in a previous year or two. That was okay. I played anyhow. It was the Sunday after the All Ireland in Croke Park again. So the game was over anyhow. That was fine. The following Sunday, I was tagged out at midfield over with West Kerry playing in the Kerry County Championship. And who would be reffing it but Colm Keneally, Bannock Dalish. Colm had played with me the previous Sunday and Brendan with Geraldines. And he just calls me over before the game in Tralee and he said, listen, boy, he said, are you mad? Do you know what you're doing? And all I could say to him, look, I said, please keep your mouth shut. He said, I'll keep my mouth shut all right, but you're very foolish.
You got away with it?
I did not, no. Nobody asked me my name for 12 months.
Yeah.
And that was the most traumatic time I went through ever, I'd say.
But you weren't suspended? Were you suspended?
I never got on an official form that I was suspended, but nobody asked me my name.
Yeah?
The Kerry Miners of the previous year that we were associated, most of them came in for a trial for the seniors who were doing so well at the time.
Oh, yeah. You were shunned.
I was lifting up.
You were blacklisted, Tom.
I was never mentioned anyhow. But the next time I was mentioned was when I got straight on to the team, with the senior team.
Yeah, well...
It was on my 20th birthday, actually.
Tom, when did you play your first game with the Kerry Seniors?
1956 it was. The championship, the first round against Tipperary. Mickey O'Connell and myself, I think we started on the same day.
How did you get the call-up? How did it come about, as a matter of interest?
Very funny. We were celebrating. We just qualified in Dublin. We were at a dress dance, and this guy comes up to me. He said, "Tom, you're on Sunday."
Yeah.
And what? Says I. I didn't know what was that because we hadn't got no call up before then, after the year of banishment.
Yeah.
So that was it. I started at wing forward. I don't know where I ended up.
Yeah, and but this gives me an opportunity to clear up publicly something about 1956, because I stood above the Michael O'Connor Terrace in 1956 and saw Niall Fitzgerald, the great Cork footballer, the Army man, kick the winning point in the replay against Kerry above the last kick of the game, and he was playing centre forward. But you were marking him, even though people have said in Jimmy O'Brien's pub that you were.
Yeah. No, I had been marking him earlier on, but he went to midfield actually that time, and Sean Moore, I think, moved in centre forward. They just switched positions for a while, so he did actually come through. We'll blame another member of the team, but I'm not going to name.
So that was Marky Nifus John when he kicked the winning point against Kerry in 1956.
No, anyway,
Tom,
difference.
That was a replay. Then 1957, of course, there was a stunning victory for Waterford, and this Mr. White came back to haunt Kerry. Talk to us about what happened in 57.
In 57, we had contested the league final, actually, for the first time, I think, in years. Since before I was born, I don't think they had contested it.
Against
Galway.
Galway,
it was.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she won 8-6 points.
They did. And at the end, well, they deservedly so.
And of course, the two the terrible twins.
They were great.
Stockwell and Purcell.
Yeah, well, a perfect understanding between the pair of them, you know. And it was actually Purcell placed Stockwell passed to Purcell, who went out in the corner, and Stockwell ran in. Purcell crossed a high ball, and it was in the net, and that was the beginning of the downfall. But never, I'd say, was a Kerry team so fit going into a first round of a Munster final as we were that time. Just a fortnight after the league.
Yeah.
After a good training stint.
And you went down to Waterford.
We went down to Waterford, and not everybody was able to travel, it would appear. And we had 13, and eventually we had 14. And then the Kerryman reporter came in, John Barrett. Well, now John had played football and played a lot of it. But he wasn't prepared.
He was pressed into service.
He was pressed into service and tugged out and played as goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And it was a time, you know, when Waterford and similar weak counties didn't have any manager. And, you know, they were really easy meet for anybody, especially in a year like that. That's why people didn't travel, I suppose, you know, that a weaker team would have been. I know that we were 8 points up after about 8 minutes or something. I didn't shame myself for midfield. Who wants a game like that? I remember everybody eased off, you know, and the game was going on to its eventual conclusion, you know, that everybody would expect. But in the second half, we were playing with the wind in the second half, actually. And again, you were the 2 or 3 points up and it didn't matter. And next thing, the Waterford crowd got behind them and behind their team, and next thing they got in, and a high ball came into the square, and the poor reporter was in the back of the net before any ball came, and the goal counted anyhow. That was fine. We were level. The time nearly up. And Tom Cunningham at centre back came up, who had been a fairly good footballer now. He moved up, and against the breeze, 60 yards out, kicked this ball straight over the bar. Final whistle, game over.
And there was a Kerryman playing against you.
George White, who had been a member of the 54 minor team, was playing.
And it's still been spoken about the day Waterford beat Kerry, Tom. Yeah. It's rumour has it that the late John Joshi, he said after the game, we'll have to wait until it's very dark to go home to Kerry and not let anybody see us coming into the county.
I remember travelling back to Dublin, and I lived in North Dublin. I was in Diggs in North Dublin at the time, and the chairman of the Dublin County Board, I saw him coming towards me, and I walked across the street, and I walked up, but he had heard it on the radio, obviously, so called me across, and I had to admit it. I was going to my bed in broad daylight.
And you won your first season in Ireland in time in 1959, didn't you? It was a big thrill, of course.
59, that was, I suppose that was the year that we, in 58, you remember, Derry beat us in the semi-final. We had bad run in 2 or 3 league games after that, and I remember a series in I think it was in the Evening Press, in the Soup by Joe Sherwood. Joe Sherwood is the name.
With the pipe.
That's the guy. He had a series of articles. What is wrong with Kerry football? A weekly. So, football, Kerry style anyhow, was condemned, gone and buried. So it must have got under the skin anyhow, because we pulled up the socks a little bit and we contested the league final against Derry again by the same token. And Derry, who had beaten us in the championship a few months before that, were very cocky. And but we scraped through by a goal, I think.
2-8 to 1-8, you beat them. That's right.
Yeah, Talia. Something like that. But yeah. The game is memorable. This again, you had the O'Connell McKeever duel at midfield. Yeah. But as well as that, I'd like to say about O'Connell. O'Connell, Seamus Murphy was playing with O'Connell at midfield for a period of 2 or 3 years.
Great footballer, Seamus. It was the
best partnership. Well, the fellow should never say the best. It was one of the finest partnerships, midfield partnerships I ever saw play. Yeah. And now I don't have to praise O'Connell or say anything about him. O'Connell. But you see, to overcome O'Connell, opposition started punching the ball. Now, Seamus was a player that could field the ball or take a ball on the ground with anybody. But he knew exactly what to do. Any ball that was broken from O'Connell, that left his fingers, rested in Seamus's lap. And he was gone with it. He was the most inconspicuous player. He's the most underestimated Kerry player ever, I'd say.
Beautiful player. Oh,
wonderful. Yeah, great service.
And of
Nap
course,
Dalish,
in all those games, least I forget to tell our listeners, you could play centre-back, centre-field, centre-forward, the full forward. You were Tom, a very versatile footballer, weren't you?
I was moved around because of necessity. You were filling a gap here and there, I suppose. That's all. I didn't mind, I suppose. Once the ball was coming, you played it.
First All-Ireland win, Tom. Great memories. Gary McMahon scored the goal at the first minute of the game.
That's right. Was that in the 59? It was, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Coming home with the
cup.
No,
that was 62.
Sorry, 62 against Roscommon, yeah. Coming home with the cup in 59 and all. Did you come home?
Yeah, I didn't. I was in Dublin at the time, so I didn't come home at all. I stayed in Dublin. Well, I went to school the following morning.
Did it mean a lot to you to win an All-Ireland medal?
Oh, it certainly did, but times were different. You turned up for work the following morning as if nothing had happened. And
Are you saying now the fellas don't turn up for work after winning
All Ireland? Not the morning after an All Ireland, I don't think they do.
Tom, you moved in then to a whole new era of Gaelic football. Yes. Down came true from the north. They beat Kerry in 1960 and in the semi final, or the final was it, and 61 they beat you. And the whole era of football
it
changed.
Was, yeah.
What are your memories of that down breaking through, Tom?
I suppose about the first team that brought that bit of professionalism in, you know, even their outfits, they were so classy and they were well presented, you know. But they had a beautiful forward line. They had the finest. They had a sextet of forwards that would compare now with Kerry's golden era. Like, they had a half forward line then. I won't use the word best, but it would. You had Paddy Doherty. In the centre, you had Jim McCartan, of course. The burly Jim McCartan.
Yeah.
And then you had Sean O'Neill and the other. Now, that was as formidable a half-forward line as I ever saw.
Yeah.
You know?
As you ever saw.
The unit, the half, the whole line.
Yeah. And they beat Kerry in the semi-final. And in the final, didn't they, in that era, Tom?
They beat us in the final that year. I wasn't playing the following year in the semi-final. They beat Kerry as well.
Yeah, but even though many people mightn't realise it before we go for a break, ye came along in 1963 and ye beat them in the National League final. Ye beat them 9-5, and you were playing full forward that day.
I remember we had made up our mind. Well, I'll tell you, I said a while ago about the wonderful sextet of forwards they had, you know, and the cohesion you had up there. But back at the other end of the field, they had the most destructive set-up. They allowed nothing to flow, you know.
Yeah.
And again, they were just well-tutored to do their job, you know.
Yeah,
and
there
were some hindrance even before the ball came.
Yeah.
I won't say entirely illegitimate, but half, we'll say.
Yeah. But Tom,
they were jealousy pulling, but it's going on.
That's still going on.
It was the start of it, I think. You know,
he had great battles with Dublin, great Dublin teams.
My first very memorable game for me is the Dublin County. I won a Dublin County Championship in the training college. It was our first year participating. The college hadn't participated in the Dublin Championship for a number of years. We negotiated that year, and then we got back in, and we sneaked on and got to the final against the St. Vincent's. The only date in my life that I remember a game, the 16th of December 1956.
And your battles with the late Lar Foley are still spoken about anywhere I go. Talk to us about Lar Foley playing fullback for Dublin and Grom's tournament finals.
He was playing that day too. But I suppose it was in the semi-final of 62. The thing about, I have two All-Irelands and I think very little of them because the games were really not great games. But the two semi-finals in the same era, the same years, were against Dublin. And they were outstanding games. And you know, you remember good games rather than winning or losing. Sometimes you remember a game you lost for the wrong reason more so than a game you won.
Who were the great players you met, Tom? Could you rattle off a few names for us?
When I was starting off young, I was in awe of names like Gerry O'Malley and Sean Purcell. And next thing, I was playing on them in a Railway Cup, I think. It was a representative game that I was on, Gerry O'Malley. And I was young, I suppose. I was 20 or 21 or something. And at the end of the game, he says, "It was an honour to play on you." I nearly fell.
Yeah,
because it was my privilege and honour to have played on him, a wonderful player.
Tom, looking back at your football career, you missed out various years in and out for various things. Have you any regrets about your football career?
Oh, gosh, God, no. No, I'd do it all over again. The regrets having lost, it sure doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't.
Come here.
You played, didn't you? You played and you made great friends and great camaraderie. Everywhere you go,
you would hold a unique record in the annals of the GAA because, in my estimation, you'd be the first ever Gaelic footballer to go on strike. And you went on strike. Talk to us about why you went on strike.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like dog. I'll tell you what it was now. Dr. Eamon was trainer of the Kerry team for years, and you know, it was different at the time. I'd say Kerry were the only county that had a trainer of that status, like, you know. But the strange thing about it, there were very few perks going now at that time. But if Kerry were travelling anywhere, if you were going to the States or going to London, the trainer was never, the manager, whatever you want to call him, was never considered. You know, I think there could have been a clash of personalities, maybe, but he was given it. So I suppose as players, we discussed this, and I remember a group of us in Dublin that were living in Dublin at the time. We discussed it, and we consulted the man himself about it. You know, and then we made representations to the county board, and it wasn't well received anyhow. So. Next thing, the trainer was changed. He was replaced, and we took it a step further then, and we refused to come to down at weekends and that, and we stayed in Dublin. But unfortunately, it coincided with my transfer to Killarney a fortnight before the All Ireland, and there we had the rest of the team were training up in the Fitzgerald Stadium. I like a fool below running around the same field on my own. Once two or three lads came down.
You patched it up.
By the same token, I went to Hastley. I had Johnny Welch and Gerald Sullivan were the two trainers, two great friends of mine. Like, you know, yes, it was nothing at all against those. Yeah. It was a point we were trying to make.
Well, Tom, listen to me. It was absolutely wonderful having you in to tell us talking this Sunday morning. I meet you in my walks down around the main and the Knockreel estate every day, and you're running around with your little dog, and we often have some great chats. But just before we go for our last piece of music, you're going to introduce your last piece of music, and it's very special because there's a great little story going with it. But I want to thank you for coming in. It was great having you. And also I want to thank in particular Sean Hurley here, who's in sound and who's producing the program in the Killarney studio. As usual, top class. I want to thank Sean for that. And finally, Tom, your final piece of music on this Sunday morning big match Terrace Talk special.
I hope I'm not too parochial, but I think you'll like it yourself too, Weesh. It's a few verses that Gary McMahon, my colleague, composed about the Dingle races. Now, Gary was a great character, and I remember on one occasion. I think it was a semi-final against Dublin in 1962. It was a tense game. It was a great game. It was one we wanted to win. And at half-time, you could cut the tension in the dressing room. And John Joshihi trying to rally the gang, and gave his little spiff. But then to try and cool us down a little bit, he said, "Gary, where is Gary? Gary, give us one blast," he said, "of On the Road to Abbey Field." And straight away, Gary gave us Shawnee and Roo. And it was on that note that we went out for the second half against Dublin in 1962.
And beat them.
We did, we won. Yeah.
Wonderful story. Yeah. Let's listen to Gary McMahon. Thank you, Tom.
'Tis the first week in August, now autumn draws near. Though my years they are telling of death, I've no fear. I'm heading back west with all neighbours to mingle and to greet long-lost friends and the races of Dingle. You'll meet film stars, hucksters, purveyors of tall tales from Boston, Buncrana, from England and Wales. With sporran and kilt, a proud Scot came from Pringle to lead in a winner at the races of Dingle. I was 12 years of age when I rode the grey mare at Ballyhantogget for a farmer from Clare. Not a wreck in my pocket to jangle or jingle, yet as happy as Larry at the races of Dingle. When Lindbergh looked down on that beautiful bay, on his lone flight to Paris from America, his heart missed a beat and his pulse went to tingle. I'll be back soon, says he, for the races of Dingle. A celibate dolphin called Fungi swims nigh. There'd be fierce consternation if he said goodbye. Destined, I know, to be pure, chaste and single, for fear he'd miss out on the races of Dingle. So I'll say in conclusion, go merry mead bio. When my time comes, I hope up above I will go. The sound of the hooves beside ocean and shingle will be heaven to me and the races of Dingle.